Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and I'm here again this evening with another segment, another episode of Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment, and you're listening to BBSRadio.com. Well, I'm thrilled to be here this evening. I have a very exciting show for us, and I just want to jump right in. You know, I don't know if you've ever considered this or not, but I have a question for you. You know, what does it mean to worship the goddess? You know, I know that we've all heard a lot of talk about this. Even a couple of my guests have talked about it in the past. You know, what does it mean to worship the goddess? When someone says that, when a man says that, what does that mean? Does that mean he goes around kissing the feet of women he sees in the street in New York City? Does it mean that he, you know, worships statues of Kali and Kuan Yin and other, you know, goddesses? You know, and then women talk about also worshiping the goddess. And, you know, I sometimes just don't know what it means. I mean, I have my own idea about what worshiping the goddess means. I mean, to me, it means being really true in myself to my feminine aspect, like giving a surrender and homage to the things that I can't control, to the feminine aspects of myself. Whereas before, I was pretty much a talking head, somebody who was just in the basic, in general, mind matrix until I woke up. So that's one question I have just to set us going this evening. And the other is, some of us have heard about what it is to have a tantric lifestyle. Like, what is that? You know, now I've told you over and over again that tantra is much more than techniques. It's much more than sex. And when somebody says of a tantric lifestyle, again, I feel that I know what that means, but I wonder if you know what that means. What does it mean to be living tantrically? What does it mean to have it be the life, the lifestyle, both the cause of the life and the result of a type of life? What does it mean? So this and more is what my guest this evening is going to be talking about. And without further ado, I want to just introduce it. Oops, I'm getting feedback. Okay, just keep going. My guest is William Paul. He's an accomplished holistic wellness counselor and skilled biofeedback practitioner. He worked with a non-cognitive feedback device called the Body Scan 2010. William began his training in holistic health in 1976. With his introduction to yoga, meditation, and the science of creative intelligence. He studied Ayurveda, the ancient Indian system of natural health care, with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, founder of the Maharishi Vedic Health Care, and the consciousness-based health care system. William also incorporates the model of the total biology of living beings in his consciousness-based approach to wellness. He's going to tell us about that this evening, too. William's continually deepening his investigation and study of the relationship of mental, emotional, and spiritual states as they relate to physical well-being, optimal health, and longevity. His body scan sessions reflect the many years of his studies with numerous therapists, in fact, William's specialty is finding solutions for incurable diseases. Okay, so I'm bringing him right on. William, are you there?
I am here, Lori. Thank you.
That's great. I heard a little feedback, so I got a little stopped in a few places, but hopefully that's not going to stop us at all.
Great.
So welcome to my show. And let me also say that I know you, and you know me, and that's the most exciting part of having you on the show, that we get together every, you know, two times a year at the New Life Expo in New York City, and we're going to be doing that again really soon. And I'm thrilled to know you, and I'm thrilled even more now that you're my guest tonight.
Thank you again. It's my pleasure.
You're welcome. So just So tell us a little bit, you know, I in my introduction, I talked about worshiping the goddess. I talked about having a tantric lifestyle. Let's go to the tantric lifestyle aspect. You know, first of all, when did you become aware or wake up to the notion of tantra? Let's just start a little bit with your history.
Well, it's a beautiful question because when I was 15, I learned yoga and meditation, and that was in 1976, and I just went on this quest for what we know in the tantra tradition is that awareness of the total manifestation of this divine energy that we call the Shakti, that's the play power of Brahman that exists in this life. I was on this quest, and so perhaps I didn't really know for the first few years of that, but I just started to discover that this was what I was here to do. And I've just lived this continuous, ongoing, living moment to moment in that knowing that there is nothing but source or this divine energy that permeates and surrounds and creates this entire life. It's invisible, we can't see it, but yet it's there because we know it by its effects. And I feel blessed to have had the grace of being open to that and then meeting so many great teachers that have, deepened my understanding of it.
So let's go back for a second, because when you say that's what you were meant to do in your life, I mean, to somebody who has no clue what you're talking about, you discovered through yoga meditation, you discovered the divine Shakti, which is the feminine energy. It's the energies of manifestation. It's everything that we can feel, touch, see, taste, measure, so on. What do you mean you were meant to do that? Well, what is that? What does that mean?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, it was like when I was a kid, I liked chocolate, so I was meant to eat chocolate, you know. I had some ice cream today, and it's like I just said, you know, this is for me, you know. I eat ice cream kind of whenever I want, but it's not too often. It's that feeling, you know, that sense of, you know, this just fits, this feels right. And it is true, it's a very abstract concept. It's, you know, what is my practice? I mean, I get up every morning and I sit in before I get out of bed, or I get out of bed and sit on the couch and I close my eyes and I meditate every day and reconnect with that silent, invisible source. And I've been doing that now, I guess, it's going on 33 years. It's very abstract. And for someone that's new to this, it's hard to really define or put in words, but it's a feeling. It's, you know, when you feel something's right, when you feel that connection to something you love and you trust it and you test it over time and it's always there, that's the sense that I have about it. That I mean, I can't prove any of this to anyone. I mean, and you can go online and read about all this, but it's all conversation. But it is an experience, and that experience is deepened over time of that inner knowing, of that silence, that play power of the Shakti, that divine goddess energy that permeates our entire universe as we know it.
So you gave us a few examples, you know, like, yeah, it permeates our entire universe. It's really all there is other than consciousness, you know, which is the masculine aspect, the idea before it comes into manifestation. The consciousness is like, oh, I have this, I could tell I have these matches, but I'm going to have to strike them. So here we have everything else, the whole universe, the whole manifestation. But you talked about chocolate, you talked about sitting quietly and meditating. You know, how were you before? You know, before you started this quest, or were you, can you even remember?
You know, I had a very, very unique childhood. I was very blessed. My parents gave me a tremendous amount of freedom. So I was always exploring. And my parents weren't really religious, but they were very open and they were very accepting. So I kind of was able to explore whatever I wanted. I grew up in a very kind of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant background. You know, we had the country club and summer camp. But in the back of my head and deep in my heart was this feeling of this sense of awe and reverence for this entire creation. And I love the analogy you said about the match. It's like, yeah, that masculine energy, that's the Purusha, that's the Shiva, that's silent and still and immutable, and it's consciousness. And the Shakti is that activity, that energy. And as we all speak about this whole world, there's this essence of everything that's this energy. And I felt it, and it was always there. It was in the back of my head and deep in my heart, but I couldn't put my finger on it until one day a guy by the name of Tom, he came up to me in math class in 10th grade, and he said something about his sister learning to meditate over the weekend. And I laughed, and I said, oh, this sounds interesting. And that was it. I was done. I took to it like a fish to water and went on a deep exploration for the deepest and highest understanding I could find about all that this is and what this whole life is about. And it's the Tantra, without a doubt.
You started in 10th grade?
10th grade.
Wow, I'm so impressed. And not a lot impresses me, but 10th grade to start meditating? Oh, my goodness. Wow. So, and yes, yeah, Tantra. So now you studied TM, is that correct?
It was my first instruction, yes, Transcendental Meditation. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who recently passed, it was 2 years ago, and he was, you know, famous for being the guru to the Beatles and the Beach Boys. But that was my start, and then I had a personal...
Wait, and my parents.
and my parents, your parents, there you go.
Yeah, yeah, my parents, yeah, the famous Laurie's parents, Betty and Marty, they were TMers.
There you go, good old TMers, yeah.
And, go ahead.
And what I wanted... during the 12 years that I had a very deep relationship with what we called the TM movement, I wanted to have a more personal relationship with Maharishi, and it wasn't possible. But out of my inner desire, you know, that law of attraction that we all hear so much about, I attracted to me a personal guru. And you know, it was by chance, by fate, I ended up in his darshan, and... It was like a reunion, as he always called it. And he's a Siddha guru of the Siddha Tantra tradition. And I spent another 10 years with him and got very, very close in the last 3 years. This was coming up to 2001. We were very close with a lot of intimacy. And it was a huge, huge unfoldment for me as I grew in my own personal understanding of this. And also in a deep inner unfoldment of it. It was challenging too. He kicked my butt. he got in there and really worked you over and made it clear where you were sort of off the path or off perspective. And it was great. It was just delightful. And he taught me to see the wisdom of life in all things and in everyone.
Wow, that's amazing. So there we start. Now we start defining what the tantric life is, you know, or the tantric path, and we're starting with the wisdom and life in everything and everyone. So that would be really the way I would phrase that in if I were teaching a tantric class right now, would be embracing it all.
Exactly. I'm with you.
You know, finding the embrace for both the light side of things and the dark side, the shadow as well. Everything.
Everything.
Everything. So this guru is in the Siddha Yoga tradition. Is that Muktananda? Was that Swami Muktananda?
Yeah, actually, he came down through his lineage, and if you trace it back, it's considered considered Kashmir Shaivism or the Tantra of Shiva.
Wow, that's the real deal.
It's the real deal. I mean, it's really about seeing the manifestation of this divine energy in all things as the masculine and feminine as a play of consciousness.
Now, if you, when you say this guy kicked your butt, give us an example, William. You know, it, like, and by the way, if you've just joined us, my guest tonight is William Faulks, and we, William and I are talking about living a tantric lifestyle. We're, William and I, you know, William's describing how he was, things that happened, and then, you know, what happens and, like, how is it that you're fully in the tantric lifestyle now? So, so when he kicked your butt, what did he kick, you know, give us an example of how he kicked you.
Well, after some years with him, I got very close, and it was always, you know, everyone wanted to be close to the guru, close to the teacher. And he asked me, and I said, sure. And so I kind of became like the de facto bodyguard. And what that really meant was I just kind of kept an eye on things, just made sure everybody was comfortable, and there wasn't any real security per se. It was a very intimate, very close little group of never any more than 50 to 70 people in his satsangs, in his discourses. But I would sit there and I would think to myself, you know, I'm in a very nice place in my life, but I still see that teacher as separate from me. We called him Baba, which is a nice term of endearment, like sort of like father in Sanskrit. And it was at that time that I actually fell in love. I was having a love relationship with another woman in the yoga. And he used it as a way to hammer me, to really challenge me. And he started, like, picking on me publicly. And really, you know, he was like, he was famous for pumping up egos and deflating egos. And he kind of did both to me simultaneously. And he would hammer me left and right. And I'd come into satsangs and he would just go, you, and he would just go after me. And it was just devastating. But in the end, it was magnificent because it had this beautiful effect of really deepening my inner search, because I couldn't rely on anything outside because he was taking it all away from me. And it was all done out of love. And in the end, he actually asked me to leave the yoga, which he called yogic holiday, which was actually a great, great gift, because he really said in so many words and acknowledged me after I left, in a very specific moment, but he said, you're on your own, kiddo. You got to do it your own. You can't rely on me anymore. And so it was that kind of, you know, clearing of the dross. It's like, you know, I always use the analogy, if you want to make a really beautiful knife or a really beautiful sword, you have to first get this metal and you heat it up and then you bang the crap out of it. And then you cool it down, and then you heat it up again, and you bang the bejesus out of it, and you do this over and over and over again. And when you're done, you have this magnificent sword or this magnificent blade.
Right.
And something that becomes invaluable. And the analogy of the blade is it cuts asunder ignorance. It destroys ignorance. It taking that analogy a step further, it's actually what slices away the foolish nonsense of ignorance and the egoic misperspective of the mind that sees, you know, good and bad, or, you know, rather than seeing just the play of this light and dark.
So what you're actually describing, I mean, all I see when you're talking, the only thing I can see is Kali. I see Kali. She has a sword in her one hand. She has some other kind of contraption in another hand.
There you go.
She has somebody's skull, like a dripping head in one hand. She has skulls around her neck. Her red tongue is sticking out. She's, you know, she's black, and she's standing on Shiva. She's standing on her lover. And she's doing exactly what you say. She's got this tempered, cured metal sword in her hand, and she's cut ego, she's cut pride, she's even cut sentimentality, and really in an effort, what you're saying, to cut duality out of existence.
Yes, exactly.
So that's, is that what we mean when we say worshiping the goddess?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I'm with you. I'm in total agreement. And the goddess, taking that a step further, that my experience of life is that it's a complete circle. And so ultimately the physical will manifest the invisible. The spiritual will manifest in the physical. So when you're aligned in that true worship of the goddess invisible, or the within, that feminine divine goddess within, the invisible, that will manifest in the outer in the form of a relationship.
Wow. So now, we're going to be tempting people a little bit because we're just about to go to break, and I really want to talk to you about relationship, you know, or relating, actually. I want to talk to you about the relationships that you've had, the relationship you're in now, and how you relate what we're talking about to your everyday life. You know, but I don't want to get into that quite this moment. I just want to take another second to say, I acknowledge you. It sounds like you have taken your lessons well. You know, you've taken them. It's different when I speak to other people. What I see in you, there's an absence of victim. Are you aware of that?
Yes, thank you. I had really good teachers.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe there are no victims.
Right.
Except if you want to be a victim, then you will be. It's
right.
A choice.
Right. If you want to complain and suffer, then you're going to just get complaining and suffering. And
yeah, we're the masters of our universe, without a doubt.
Right. Right. Well, I always say to people, you know, if you are suffering, remember that you're adding suffering to the world.
Yes, I agree.
And the world has enough suffering, so why do we want to do that? Why do we want to add suffering? That's like
right. And suffering is nothing more than a mental construct. Pain and discomfort, those are very real experiences, but suffering is actual a mental construct we add to that experience that we don't like.
Right.
So
right.
It's a choice we make.
All right, well, we're going to pause here for a commercial break. And if you just tuned in, I want to let you know you're listening to Tantra Cafe. I'm Laurie Handler, your host. My guest is William Faltz, and he is an amazing, accomplished holistic wellness counselor and skilled biofeedback practitioner. He does live a Tantra lifestyle, Tantric lifestyle. He's pretty much in an orgasmic state all the time. So we're going to hear more from him about that in just 1 minute. Please stay tuned. Where will you be in October, on October 24th, 2009? I'm inviting you to join me at the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival for the U.S. premiere of Tantric Tourists, an award-winning comedy about 10 people who accompany me, Laurie Handler's, on a tour of India. This is a road trip movie that makes a difference. It's got depth, it's got soul, and it will certainly take you places you've never been before. So please join me for this amazing event coming up soon. That's October 24th, 2009, Tantric Tourists at the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival. I want to also let you know that the film has won awards in every festival that it's been in so far in Europe and even in Mexico, and this is its first showing in the United States. So for more information, go to www.tantrictourists.com. You can see a trailer of the film there, and you can find out more information like playing times in the film festival by going to FortLauderdaleFilmFestival.com. Okay, we're back. So, William, now I want to talk to you about relating. So tell us a little bit about the tantric way that you are in relationship.
Well, you know, it did take a while to get here, but I found my female goddess. And as I said earlier, if you weren't on the call, is that my experience of life is that there's a direct flow of energy from the top down to the inside out. So what we believe and feel and project in our own minds is outpictured in the world, is in the three-dimensional form as we know. So when you're really clear about your goddessness that's within you, that Shakti value in life, you will manifest it, if you choose, on the physical, in the form of a partner, a relationship. And I have found my goddess divine. Her name's Amy, and she is my picture of my woman. And she is, we live a really very blessed life. And to answer your question about our tantric practices, every morning we sit together in our home living room office, most often in our pajamas, and we drink a healthy cup of coffee or tea, and we just discuss our day and plan our day and just enjoy the moment together. And we do this 6 days a week without fail.
So 6 days a week, what do you do on the seventh day?
On the seventh day, Amy works as a massage therapist. She works on Saturdays in the city in Manhattan. We're outside of Manhattan. And so that morning it would be too early. But the other 6 days, it's just the highlight of my day. And we just, you know, anything goes. And it's just delightful to have a partner who's an everything partner. And we work together and we have various entrepreneurial businesses, and it's just a delight. And I met Amy a few years ago, and boy, I'll tell you, it took me this long to become the right man so I could manifest the perfect woman.
So what you're really saying here is that you took responsibility. I mean, this is an amazing thing for a man to say. I might actually have you say it again. You took responsibility for creating the Shakti energy, the goddess energy inside you, getting it right inside you for yourself through the practices that you were doing, through getting your ass kicked by your teacher, all these things. And then you perfected her, whoever she would be, inside you, and then she showed up.
Yeah, and the same parallel was true for her. She had been having relationships with all the wrong men, and one day she finally just said, enough of this, I'm not going to do this anymore. And she actually did a manifestation process, and she manifested me by creating this concept of what she wanted to see in this man, you know, this tall, dark, handsome man. And she had this very specific list. And one aspect of that list was actually related directly to the work I do and this holistic wellness healing that I do. And she actually put that. She wanted a man to teach her about that. And she put that in her list. And I literally bumped into her. I saw her at a holistic wellness expo, and she was giving massage. And I was just like looking across the room and said, oh, that looks interesting. Let me go and check that out. And it was it. That was it. I was done. And we've been best friends ever since.
Wow. So, you know, let's just put it in different terms.
Okay.
You know, like I tell people that if they need to clear out their garbage and, you know, do emotional release techniques, I tell people they have to do all these things before they can be clear. And the practice of clearing is, to me, like preparing a landing strip. So if I'm preparing a landing strip, I'm cleaning it of debris, I'm taking away trees, I'm getting ducks and geese and all those kinds of things out of the way so that my plane can land. And it's not going to land on a dirty, crummy landing strip. It's just simply not going to land. I have to be clear. There has to be a clear path. And William, it sounds like that's what you did. That when I say you took responsibility, you were accountable for it. Like, it's amazing when you say that because I haven't heard that many people talk about it.
Like, I love your metaphors. They're so wonderful. I love this. I could go on for days to describe the angst and the challenges and relationship. I mean, there were times in my life, I always wanted to have my life partner. There were times where I felt I was going to be single and alone and miserable. And, you know, it's like, oh, you know, going on my 40s and I haven't found it. And one challenging relationship after another. I mean, I was manifesting wonderful women, but it just wasn't the right combination, and clearly I wasn't the right man for this woman, and of course vice versa. But I went through a huge transformation I guess it was 2004 when I got a divorce, and divorces at best it's challenging. And boy, it was huge for me, but I really came to terms with my reality about women, about the feminine, about myself, about my commitment to life, about absolutely unequivocally not settling, not being willing to do whatever it took to manifest in my life myself so I could have that ideal relationship. And it happened. Without a doubt.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Yeah, I definitely want the reality, you know, the authenticity of you. You know, obviously you did go through some suffering. Obviously you did go through the angst and the pain and divorce. And was that the only divorce?
I've actually, Amy and I are engaged and we'll be married this fall as the plan goes. We'll see, you know, it unfold. But yeah, I mean, I've been married twice. So this will be three. They say three's a charm, I think, or something.
Three. Well, they say three strikes and you're out, but we don't want to.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, as a young boy, it's funny because my parents were so against divorce. It wasn't even like a sin. It was like a curse, you know. So it's kind of maybe on some deep unconscious level, I was saying, well, I'll show you I can still be okay and be a divorcee, or I can still be lovable or loved, or and you know, that sense of acceptance. So maybe that was something I worked out through that. It was the relationships, every one of them have been a huge blessing. It's been an opportunity to really forgive myself, to forgive the feminine. It's huge. It's just every relationship I've ever had, and even to this day, and this is something that my guru was really instrumental in teaching me, was that to see the guru, or to see, as you will, the teacher in everything and everyone, to see that wisdom that's really there, that life is always showing us the opportunity to take it to a higher level, to a deeper level of understanding, a deeper level of forgiveness, a higher level of grace. All of the above. There are no accidents in life. I don't accept that. I accept if there's an accident, we've created it so we can learn from it. So just as everything in life is grace that we've created so that we can learn from that and enjoy that. It's a perfect world. You know, gravity never disappoints and water's always wet enough. And when I wake up in the morning, I put my two feet on the ground and things start happening because that consistency is there. And I believe that follows in our entire life. And when we become more clear about where we're coming from through going through all that we choose not to accept is okay, life gets much, much better.
Well, that's such wonderful wisdom. It really is about, you know, it's saying I have choice in this and I must be choosing this. I'm choosing this right now. I'm choosing this right now. I'm
absolutely
choosing this right now. And when I'm not choosing this anymore, I won't be choosing this, but I must, you know, something I've found, I don't discuss it that often. I mean, I do discuss it in my most advanced course called Initiation that I teach, but I don't just have chit chat about this, you know, but since it's here, right here between us, you know, in this conversation, it occurs to me that when people are suffering, they're choosing it and they get pleasure from, I mean, to me, Tantra is transformation through pleasure. So if the truth be told, when people choose heartbreak and suffering and na-na-na, and that's, you know, that's like an addiction, they're getting pleasure from it. And they could be choosing pleasure. They could be choosing divineness. They could be choosing joy. They could be choosing all that and get pleasure from it. And they, until they really own that, they're actually deriving pleasure from the dark side or whatever, that then they almost can't set themselves free until they actually see it for what it is, that they're calling it. And it sounds to me like you have been calling, you've been clearing, as I said before, and then calling in exactly what you want, exactly the partner you want, exactly the partnership you want, exactly the method of relating that you want. And, we could say you're a master at it.
Well, I feel very blessed. There's no question about it. Life is a blessing on all levels, and it is absolutely a choice. And I think our greatest challenge in life is not being small, but being great. We shirk from greatness, not from being small. And it's our biggest fears are having that deepest divine ecstatic pleasure, and our greatest fears are having an ideal life that whatever the weather is, that we're okay. You know, whether it's hot, whether it's cold, whether it's rainy, you know, whether you're depressed, whether you're sad, whether you're elated, whether you're in ecstasy, it's a ride, you know, and it's a beautiful ride.
Yeah, it has plenty of colors. It has all kinds of things.
Yep.
It has a variety, and all of it is what spices things up. I love that when you said it was a ride. It is a ride. It's a great ride. You know, fasten your seatbelt and just go.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I took my nephew to the roller coaster. We had this wonderful Six Flags Great Adventure in the shore, down our shore. And I took him a few years ago. He was 14. And it was so cute. It was raining, and we had rain gear, and there were very few people in the park. And when we finished the rides, you notice everybody was, like, relieved to get off. And he'd sneak right back on and go again. You know, the line wasn't very long, so he'd just say, "Can I go again?" I said, "Sure." You know, they'd let him. And it was so adorable to see that in that youth and that joie de vivre, that joy of life. And there seems that somewhere along the way we lose that. We forget that we're really children at heart, and life is an adventure, and it's all about that joy, and no matter what's going on. And just the other day, you know, we have so many ideas about aging and getting old and all these things. And I was in a parking lot coming out of a store, and this gentleman was moving very slowly, putting his walker in a car, and his body was out of shape, and he was big, and he had a lot of edema, and wasn't, you know, didn't have physical, what we call physical attractiveness, and you know, time had sort of gotten the better of him. But he looks at me with the boldest smile that I've seen all summer and starts speaking to me with joy and with appreciation, and had me laughing and giggling. And I said, "You know, this is a perfect life." And there he was, and he waited for me to go and get in my car, because he was taking a long time to get in his. And I said, "You know, it just keeps getting better. It just keeps getting better.
Wow, that's so great. It's really great. Well, we're going to be taking another break momentarily. When we come back from the break, I want to talk to you a little bit about the practices that you might do together. You know, like the things that that you and Amy share together. It's some things that you know, like rituals or whatever. Some regular type of practices that you two have come to enjoy together. I mean, I don't know if Amy was a TMer or whatever. I mean, I have no idea. I do, of course, I know Amy, but at this moment, I know more about you than I know about Amy. So I like to just hear, you know, so people can take something away, like what they can do in their private lives, in their personal lives, and what they can do if they're with a partner or partners, what they can do that would render them this type of joy that you have, this amazing type of going for it, gusto, embracing it all joy, because I really feel that is the tantric lifestyle, that is the orgasmic moment in every moment, to be fully present, fully alive, and loving it, you know, no matter what it is, no matter what's coming. So
no matter what it is, I agree.
So we'll come back to that. In the meantime, is there any, let's just let people know how they can get in touch with you if they want to get in touch with you. Like, what, is there a website or is there something that you want to let them know about? We'll mention it again in the next segment.
Sure. Well, I'm happy to respond to anyone. My email is william@onlinewilliam.net.
Okay, that's great. William,
I read all my emails and I respond to them. And I'm a phone person, so if you leave your phone, I'll probably call you.
That's great. And anyone who's listening knows for sure that you can get in touch with me, Laurie@butterflyworkshops.com. You can write to me about questions about the show, guests you'd like to see on the show, and also you can find out, you can get in touch with my guests or ask anything about my guests if you write me. So we're going to break now, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Tantra Cafe.
Are you feeling like you just don't get it? All this talk about sex and love, love and sex? Feeling like all people ever think about and talk about is sex? Maybe you are longing for a more spiritual sexual connection. Hey, maybe you are just totally confused about all of it. Lori Handler's new book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy, puts the innocence and love back into sex, and it gives Tantra the respect it truly deserves. In this book, you will discover a wonderful meditation on self-love. You will also find fun new ways to develop an intimacy with yourself, whether or not you have a partner. And now, for only $19.99, you can get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. Right now, go to www.sexandhappiness.com and order your copy. Give yourself the gift.
That's sexandhappiness.com.
If you want financial advice on how to plan for the future, I know exactly who you should call. My friend Jeff DeLone. Jeff's worked with over 300 individuals, professionals, and corporations in the past 20 years. He helps clients develop strategies for estate planning, investments, and retirement. Jeff DeLone is located in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania. But wherever you are in the United States, you can reach Jeff at 610-356-1254. Or you can email him at jdelone@delonefinancialgroup.com. That's jdelone@delonefinancialgroup.com.
Securities and investment advisory services are offered through FSC Securities Corporation, member FINRA SIPC. Jeff DeLone is a registered representative with FSC Securities Corporation. DeLone Financial Group is not.
Well, we're back, and in this segment, we're going to be talking about the actual concrete things. You know, I asked my guest, William Faulks, before the break, if he would talk to us a little bit about what, you know, what his concrete practices are. Because I definitely want to know for myself, and I want everyone out there to know what, you know, what they can do to have themselves have this joyous tantric lifestyle. So, William, you're our expert. What, when you wake up in the morning, you said you drink natural, good, healthy coffee. I'm assuming that's some kind of really organic coffee.
Well, it's actually a herbal-infused coffee.
Okay. What does that mean?
The most important part of the day, and I can't emphasize this enough, is that quiet, silent time you take for yourself. Every morning I get up, and if I either sit in bed or I go down and sit on the couch, and I have a closed eyes meditation. There was a time when it was very structured. You know, I do my 20 minutes twice a day as I was originally taught, but now it's more free. And to me, it's the single most important thing of a life, and that is to make that demonstrative commitment to becoming more aware of the invisible, to practicing a form of meditation, a closed eyes, silent practice that brings you more in touch with that invisible. I mean, there's so many, you know, there's mantra meditation, there's, you know, there's inner practices of breathing. You know, everyone is a little bit different. I mean, I began with mantra meditation, and now, you know, the mantra really, which is a repetition of a sound, a word, that has a vibration, that mantra just rings within me constantly. And so I just sit in the silence. And it's not about being quiet inside, it's about noticing inside. It's allowing the mind to be free, not trying to still the mind, but just being aware. And sitting in that process, to me, since I've done it every day for 33 years, in fact, I actually stopped meditating for a year just to see what it felt like.
Wow. What was that like?
It wasn't really different, because by that time it was kind of like, you know, eyes open, eyes closed. It was one continual meditation. So I just went back to it just like, you know, I mean, I brush my teeth twice a day just because it works, you know. It's
right.
Very practical. But it's beyond practical, because it's that, I can't emphasize enough how important it is, because that's the basis, that invisible is the basis for going out into the visible world and being more open, being more aware. And as a practice in the world, I don't feel there's anything higher than this. Loving what's unlovable, accepting what's unacceptable, and doing what's impossible. And that's why we're here on planet Earth. I mean, there's so many things so unlovable on this Earth, and so many things that seem so impossible to do, and so many unacceptable things, and yet every day we're confronted with accepting them. And
yeah,
the willingness and openness to be present for that, to just that I feel is, and it's the hardest thing to do, because it's so often that, you know, there's some escape, some way to get it. Well, you know, I really don't want to feel that. I really don't want to see that. I really don't want to get that. And yet that's where our gift in life is, to become more open to the divine Shakti that's flowing in all of us, that isn't prejudice. It isn't, it doesn't make exceptions. It's not, you know, it's omnipresent. And that willingness to be open to that flow, even when the flow seems congested or completely blocked and stuck, that's where I feel our greatest gift is in life. Our greatest power will be found as well. And the demonstration of our gifts. And so I get up every morning, I do my meditation, and you know, it's, you know, like I said earlier, it's the gravity's here for me. I get to do with what I want with it. You know, water's always wet enough, And Amy and I, we just sit together and just go over our day. We just with an openness, you know. Part of our practice actually is kitty cats. We have an indoor cat and now two outdoor cats. That one is a feral cat, and she's apparently invited a boyfriend into her life, and she chooses to live in the garden. And Clarence, our indoor cat, and for Amy, it's like part of her practice to just have that open playfulness with a cat. And it's really delightful to see them. And I honor it. It's very much a part of our day, and it's throughout the day. And, you know, our meetings in the morning, they kind of morph into whatever we want. You know, sometimes we go back to the bedroom or we even have our morning meetings in the bedroom. And they kind of evolve into ever what strikes us in the moment.
So you're really in a flow. I mean, there's a term for this. There's a tantric term for it, and it actually is borrowed from an Islam practice. It's called Ladihan, and it means following inner guidance. And it's what I've taken it as my name, Ladihan. It means,
beautiful.
Because for me, handlers, I didn't want to handle any more things. So I took Ladihan as my spiritual name so that I would be able to just follow inner guidance from now on and trust that inner compass rather than looking outside for any answers. So it sounds like that's what you practice on a moment-by-moment basis.
Without a doubt, because I believe the outer reflects the inner. And if we constantly go back within, in an open way, not so much in a looking way, but in an open way, we'll see the signs. We'll see them. They'll come to us. You know, we'll get the confirmation. We'll know just by asking within in an open and just a very silent way. We will attract to us the demonstration of whether we're on track or whether we're off track. Yeah, I love it. I live that. And every day I strive to be even more in the flow of that. And one of the most valuable things that's come up for me in my life is absolute unconditional acceptance. I have this deepest respect for my love for Amy. I can't even describe it in words, but the devotion that I have for her, it's my highest thing in life. I mean, I do everything with that devotion. And yet, you know, it's like I love all cats, but I take care of my kitty cat, you know. I love all women, but I love the goddess, and yet Amy is that Ishti Devata of mine, that goddess of mine that I worship day and night as a reflection of that inner opening to the goddesshood.
Right, right. Well, William, I just thank you so much. It's been completely refreshing to talk to you, to hear a man say those things. I think there's many, many women who, you know, will be listening going, you know, I want that. I want some of what she's having. And there's many men who would like to know how you accomplished it, and I feel that you've given some very, very good advice, good tips, good places to start referencing. And I thank you so much for being my guest this evening.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm thankful to be on.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, that's going to wrap up the show for this evening. Again, we didn't say, William, you want to just tell people about your chocolate? Because that's like a tantra thing. We got about 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's, as I said earlier, I was a little boy. I loved chocolate. And I just said, this is going to be a part of my life forever. And then when I was 15, I found out it really wasn't good for me, you know, all the sugars and the fats and all these things, and spent all these years trying to avoid it to no avail. And then last year, someone introduced me to a healthy chocolate. And you can find out more about this at my website, healthychocolateprosperity.com. That's healthychocolateprosperity.com. And it's just divinely delicious dark chocolate as we know it, with healthy properties that like none other on the planet. And it's a big part of my life. I eat it day and night, literally.
Wonderful. I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid of you. Anyway, thanks so much again for being my guest. Folks, if you want to get in touch with me, it's Laurie@butterflyworkshops.com or tantracafe.com. I say to you now, namaste from Tantra Cafe.